good morning to Lenny Shulman, because Lenny Shulman is joining us because I wasn't going to miss an opportunity to promote Lenny's book signing on Saturday in Lexington. Lenny, good morning.
So he barges into my time to tell you to promote his book signing.
He didn't tell me.
I thought somebody died. They're calling me from the middle of Steve's show. I was like, what the hell's going on here? What did I miss? Thank you so much.
Tell everybody where you're going to be.
So many book signings, everybody's lost track of them anyway.
Yes, yeah, so there's actually a great event. Saturday is the annual Kentucky Book Fair. Just for those who think we don't read here in Kentucky, it's not true. They have an annual book fair. It's at the Kentucky Horse Park in the Altec Arena, and I will be signing copies of my Justify book from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. this coming Saturday. It's a wonderful event. There'll be a lot of other sports books there. The Peter Lee and Jennifer Kelly and everybody else is going to be on hand, so it's a big deal.
Outstanding.
I highly suggest 9 to 3. Everybody show up for that. It sounds like fun. It reminds me when I was in grammar school, and we used to have like a little book fair, and you come out and, you know, you can buy books, and my mother would give me some money to buy books. There's something always fun about a book fair, especially when Lenny Shulman is there to sign his book.
Well, I've actually signed at this event before, and it's really big. They have a lot of people come through, all of the librarians and teachers throughout the state come through looking to buy books, and it's actually a really nice deal. And if I may plug something else, which makes me absolutely no money whatsoever, people should be looking on the Keeneland website at some point in the coming days, because I did a wonderful, it's not because I had anything to do with it, I did a wonderful Q&A evening with Ted Bassett the other night, last Tuesday night, and it was just phenomenal. Mr. Bassett's now 98 years old and sharper than I am, not that that's a high barrier, clear, but he absolutely put on an amazing performance. G.D. Hieronymus and the Keeneland staff videotaped it, and so that video is going to be available at some point, and it's a wonderful thing, so if people want to look out for that.
How old is Bassett now?
Ted just 98. Turned 98 3 weeks ago.
Unbelievable.
Yeah, he's a force of nature. The guy is just unreal and has stories about everything, sharp as a tack, remembers everybody's name. He's a remarkable guy, really is. And, it was part of the Keeneland Library series, which is just a phenomenal series that, you know, has authors in every month, every other month. And, it's free. People can come. They feed them. They wine them. And the Keeneland Library, for anybody who doesn't know, because I just did research there last week, it is an amazing, amazing resource for anybody in the sport who has a question they need answered or is researching for a book or an article they're doing. It is the most amazing resource that this industry has.
Did you talk, given the proximity to Veterans Day, did you talk about his World War II experience?
We absolutely did. Veterans Day had been the day before, and so the Marine Corps shaped his life to a large extent. He fought in World War II in the Pacific Theater and was also the main fundraiser in getting these statues of Sergeant Reckless installed. There's one at the Marine Corps Museum in Quantico.
Right.
There's one at Camp Pendleton, where she lived out her days in California. And there was an installation at the Kentucky Horse Park last
week. Excuse me one second. If anybody hasn't seen the one at the Kentucky Horse Park, it is gorgeous.
Well, it's really the same statue, and they are gorgeous. Jocelyn Russell did it, and... Yeah, it's amazing, and of course, Sergeant Reckless was a war hero in Korea who carried injured soldiers up and down hills and carried ammunition up and down hills to the Marines under fire. It's an amazing story for anyone who doesn't know it. And Mr. Bassett was absolutely the prime mover and shaker as far as raising the funds to do this stuff. Again, he's just an amazing guy. It's incredible.
Very nice. I'll get the links to the Q&A. I did see it online in the last day or so. So I'll recirculate that for everybody. And Lenny, we obviously, since you're here, any post Breeders' Cup thoughts? The you and Steve, we were together obviously through technology at Santa Anita with Steve, but. How about, why don't you guys do some, you could do a little postscript from your perspective.
Yeah, and I know Steve Hask and I have talked about this, and he does acknowledge, being there and not being there are two different things. But, having been there, I thought it came off extremely well. Obviously, at the 11:59 hour, we had a significant problem there. But up until that moment, I don't think... Santa Anita could have done a better job. The weather was perfect. The horsemen showed up. I thought it was a wonderful event. I really did. And I can't tell you how many letters we've been getting to the Blood Horse since then. Oh, I knew they shouldn't have had this at Santa Anita. I knew it was a mistake to have this at Santa Anita. It's like, yeah, schmuck. 100 yards more, and it would have been an absolutely perfect Breeders' Cup. So anybody after the fact who's now, I knew we shouldn't have had it said, it's like, go pound sand. You don't even know what you're talking about. They had four breakdowns at Keeneland, during their meeting. You're going to tell me you know where these breakdowns are going to be? The breakdown rate at Santa Anita since they came back last March from taking the pause there to fix things up, has been in line with every average ever.
It's been lower. It's been lower.
Yeah. So anybody who's writing these, it was so stupid to have the Breeders' Cup. Yeah, go. I don't even want to say it. We're on the radio. I thought it was a really good Breeders' Cup. Obviously, they erred on the side of caution. It was a much deeper track than usually you'd find there. And I understand that cost some horses, but... some of the big horses ran great and some of them didn't, and I don't know that that's any different from any other Breeders' Cup.
That's fair, too, actually.
If you listen to Dr. Rolday, Mongolian Groom would have broken down anywhere. I mean, I don't, it probably had nothing to do with the racetrack.
Yeah. That's a whole different discussion, given how heavy and slow the track was.
Well, you remember what he said? He said you can make a track too hard and fast.
Of course,
you can make it too deep and
exactly
slow.
The extremes
to get it somewhere in between. And they went one direction. Like you said, you could see it when the horses came back and they were completely covered in dirt. And you can see the way they came home that they were tiring badly. In every race, they were tiring badly coming back. So it was obviously a very testing racetrack. And, like Lenny said, a bunch of horses didn't run their race. I mean, Omar Beach was, way too far back. Midnight Bisou was too far back. But I think a lot of horses resented because the track was so loose, it resented the kickback.
Of course. You
remember, by the way, Blue Prize was on the outside of Midnight Bisou and got first run on her, and she had a clear run while Midnight Bisou was behind horses and probably was getting a lot of that kickback and wasn't able to move with her. So, like I said, there were good parts to it. There were not so good parts to it.
Yeah, Steve Bick was out there for longer than I was, and I'm sure, and talked to more people, I'm sure. And Steve, I think you'll agree with me. I mean, there was just a sense of paranoia among any official person out there, trying to err on the side of safety whenever possible. I mean, everybody out there, certainly the safety issue was paramount in each and every person's mind. And there's no question that they would have bent over backwards to go the 10 extra miles, you know, if they thought anything was gonna make it safer, because that was the issue that was hanging over the entire week. I'm sure you'll agree with me on that.
No, there's no doubt. And in fact, for those that if you missed Graham Motion the other day, I think Tuesday, I'm losing track of days, but Tuesday, you know, we addressed that, and you know, one of the things I wanted Graham to expand on was the written commentary that he had on Twitter right after Cup. And you know, Graham stressed that element. You know, for those, Lenny and Steve, that are talking about where the event, you know, might have been or could have been held, that nobody was going to take on the Breeders' Cup. There was no consideration. There may have been some feelers put out, but nobody was volunteering to have the event. And there were also legal commitments, contracts and such involved. The decision, quote unquote, to, you know, to stay at Santa Anita wasn't a hard one, because there wasn't any place else to go. So,
but you have to show support for California.
I agree. I completely agree.
You can't leave them out there to die and wither on the vine. And you know what, Steve? And maybe it's because I used to live out, I don't know, but anybody walking around Santa Anita who doesn't think of the enormity of the loss if that place would ever go away is crazy, because it is absolutely a mecca of horse racing in the, not the country, the entire world. It's a jewel that we have, and you have to do everything you possibly can to help California horse racing at this point. And the other thing about Craig Fravel, oh, he's taking the job at Santa Anita, it's a conflict of interest. Look, it was a unanimous decision among the Breeders' Cup board to keep the Breeders' Cup there. It was the correct decision, and not only for the legal reasons that Steve just enunciated, but it was the right thing to do.
I think it was the only thing to do. I mean, there was no way in the world they could leave San Anita hanging out to dry like that.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
You know, you have to take, you know, you have to take a chance. And like Lenny said, you know, came within, 100 yards of everything coming, coming along perfectly. And, it's just a shame that it had to happen at that point.
Show me where the guy
I got the sense, Steve, talking to you, leading up to the Breeders' Cup, I got the sense that, you were apprehensive. I think everybody there was. They just wanted everything to go well, because it was just, Paul hanging over it with this microscopic scrutiny of this particular Breeders' Cup. So it was important that everything went perfectly, and it looked like it was going to.
Yep.
Yeah, look, there's no guarantee, How do you figure that Del Mar goes the entire summer without a breakdown and then has three in one day? I mean, how do you figure it? How are you supposed to figure these things out in advance? How do you figure out that Keeneland has its worst meet, ever? I don't get it, but one thing that does come out of this, and I heard it while I was out in California, there are people on the CHRB and there are people, trainers and everybody else, they really think that the synthetic is the way to go. It's going to be a whole new debate that we had 12 years ago. And, we should be prepared to discuss this, because there's a lot of people who do believe that, that's the way we should be going, particularly out in California now.
Yeah, I think there's also talk about emulating Woodbine. By, you start looking at other countries, like you look at Europe and Australia, which is all grass. But if you look at Woodbine, that made their racing predominantly grass by having the outer track a grass course and then having a synthetic on the inside, and maybe bringing more importance to grass racing and use the use this synthetic for like triple crown races and things like that. You know, it's a huge move, but you know, you just don't know if the sport is going to be forced to do something like that in order to save itself.
Well, there. I don't know if you saw the piece that Dan Ross wrote yesterday and overnight, where Aiden Butler is quoted discussing just that. The one thing that that Butler did stress was that there's not going to be a knee-jerk reaction and an instantaneous decision, because there's real concern. There was real concern in the days following the end of Breeders' Cup, and the last couple of years I've been staying after cups to, you know, to have interviews, and I'm glad I particularly on that front that I was around Monday and Tuesday, because there was immediately some, you know, whispers that that they were going to react immediately, and that they would delay the start of the December season, and they would install. And there was that whole that doesn't appear to you know, be getting any traction.
But that was before the actual 2-day event. I heard it, you know, in the days leading up.
Steve. Yeah.
That plan of shutting down December and January was even being kicked around, whether it's a rumor, whether there was something more to it, but it was being kicked around before the Breeders' Cup.
What do you both
think of the recent Butas Aladdin findings?
Wait till Dr. Parkin. Let Dr. Parkin let him interpret the study and the results. But I brought it up with Allday, in fact, yesterday, and Tuesday, and you know he agreed. I mean, I don't think anybody is going to be surprised that you know the further you can spread any non-steroidal anti-inflammatory, the further away from, you know, from race day, the better off you're going to be. I mean, the initial parts of the study that have come out are not surprising, but let Dr. Parkin handle that.
Well, people forget that that's the way racing was. You know, Butte was illegal, and so was Lasix. For a long time, you know, New York, you know,
don't
New York
yeah, but
didn't
don't,
get lazy until the late 80s.
Steve, don't equate Lasix with Butte.
I'm talking about the two race day medications. Lasix is discussed. As long as it's discussed, it can be mentioned. I'm just saying that I remember the days when both those drugs that are both used now that are common were both illegal. That's all.
Yeah. This is an easy step that should be made, that should not be controversial. This should be a done deal as far as that goes. And, you know, Frank Axis does some really good reporting on it in this week's Blood Horse, and I think Dr. Parkin's going to have a column in next week's Blood Horse to discuss it. But, yeah, this is an easy, non-controversial thing that absolutely needs to be done, right? If we can save half a horse every month or whatever, you know, we need to do this, without a doubt.
Yeah, it won't even be controversial. The bigger issue that is going to vex things at Santa Anita for December is going to be the horse population, because countless outfits are making arrangements to be elsewhere, and it's going to be very evident in the entry boxes at other venues, and that's going to be the biggest problem, is going to be putting a meet together, essentially.
I'm curious to see if it affects attendance as well.
Well, the horse population is going to affect handle just immediately. It already has. They release their numbers yet? They're going to be horrific, no matter how good Breeders' Cup was.
Yeah, well, they're going to have to prove that they have a safe racetrack, number one. I don't know what they do about purses because clearly they cannot compete with Kentucky. They cannot compete with Oaklawn. They cannot compete with New York. And, you know, the exodus start, I mean, I won't call it an exodus. I'll say that there were a lot of trainers who certainly sent strings out to other places, you know, last year when the trouble started brewing. And so that is certainly a horse population problem for California. But, you know, Oaklawn is lengthening its meet, and, it's not only drawing horses from Kentucky and Keeneland, but it's certainly going to be drawing horses from California. So that's, I don't know how you fix that, but certainly proving you have a safe racetrack would be a huge first step. And then you got to look at the purse structure after that.
Lenny Shulman, for everybody, the Kentucky Book Fair at the All-Tech Arena, at the Horse Park, Saturday, nine to three.
You can get a justified book and then look at the Sergeant Reckless statue, and it'd be a great day.
It's the Kentucky Book Festival, which actually goes.
The justified.
It's unbelievable.
Spectacular bid.
Well, did you hear my conversation with Joe Manning yesterday about the oral history piece from the Louisville Story Program?
Yeah, I have the book. We're going to be running an excerpt there. It's a wonderful piece, really terrific idea and concept. Well done, and congrats to everybody involved with that. Really a nice concept.
I'm delighted to have Joe on yesterday, and if you missed it, you can pick it up at the archive, and Better Lucky Than Good, and Justify from Lenny Shulman, and Sir Barton, Jennifer Kelly, and Peter Lee with the spectacular bid, all going to be there on Saturday. So there is no better Christmas gift for the horse lover on your list than a book. And Lenny, are you gonna have a couple of copies of your basketball book under the table?
You know, the problem with that, Steve, is people who buy these books, they have to check out at like a front counter. So, if you're carrying a book, unfortunately, there is no under the counter. You're going to have to pay for it somewhere. So I was thinking of that last night. It's so funny you should say that, but I don't think so. I think I'm going to have to play it on top of the counter this time. So,
Well, for those that have not bought Lenny's other two books, and of course, Steve Haskin takes shape in the books, and there is the Haskin character, Points and Long Way From Home.
Yes, those are still available on Amazon. Those are fiction, and then of course Justify, and people can get their hands on a used copy of Ride of Their Lives about the jockey colony in the early 2000s. And
what do you mean by used?
Well, I mean the book's out of print, but that you can still buy them. And
it sounds like somebody else has already read it. You buy somebody else's book. I got a whole bunch of books at home that I can sell used if anybody wants to buy them. I got every book imaginable.
People aren't locking these up in highlighters like you're in college. I mean, come on.
Well, and of course, those of you that go to those kinds of, there's all kinds of places that have these 50% off books, and you can get a copy of the Bob Baffert, the unauthorized autobiography, the only time that there's ever been an autobiography that was not authorized by the person who wrote it.
I had to threaten him with that. I told him he's going to make history. If he didn't talk to me, I was going to have to write it myself. I was going to have to write his autobiography. Based on what other people told me about him.
He refused to cooperate in the writing of his autobiography.
Yeah.
Yes.
So I finally had to go to Ray Pollock and tell him. I said, "Look, this book's got to be. This is a Preakness. The book was due at the end of June, and I have nothing." I spoke to his wife. I spoke to Brad McKenzie. I spoke to Mike Pegram. I had his whole life through the eyes of other people except his eyes. And finally, I had to do the whole thing over the phone. You know what it was like? By the way, putting that tape recorder back on and saying, if there's nothing on this tape, I'm quitting the horse racing industry. I'm never writing another book. If this tape broke in the middle of it, there's a four-hour conversation when Ray had to call him up and say, listen, you got to do it. That's when I told him. I said, you know, you're going to make literary history. You're the first author ever to have the first unauthorized autobiography.
So that's my favorite. That
isn't there supposed to be another book on him coming out? Has anybody heard about that?
Yeah. Supposedly somebody has been following him around for like several years.
Well, David Israel. David Israel.
Oh, yeah, David Israel. Right. I don't know.
It's close. I asked David. I must have asked David 6 months ago, and he's finishing touches or something. It's not far off.
Maybe his something.
They're waiting. For
well, it's like.
What are they doing?
I'm not sure.
How long do you want to wait?
I said, "What do you want to do? What do you want to do with autobiography after 3 years?" I mean, it's based on Silver Charm and Real Quiet, and then like part of the following year. I said, this guy's got a whole career ahead of him, but they wanted to, you know, they wanted to make sure they were the first to do it and get it before anybody else did a book on him. Just look what's happened since that book came out.
Yeah, and if I could circle back in this conversation, you know, Ted Bassett wrote his biography with the great late Bill Mooney about 12 years ago, and the germ of that was some friend of his said, Ted, have you written your obituary yet? You know, you shouldn't have some schmuck from a funeral home writing your obituary for you. And Ted said, I haven't written my obituary yet. And he talked to Bill Mooney about it. And he said, well, you know what? We should really make this a book. So that brings the conversation full circle to writing biographies.
Unbelievable. I guess the Israel David Israel's book is like the Hennigan brothers movie about Larry Jones. They've been waiting for an ending for 7 years.
That's going 8 years already, I think.
Exactly. It's turning into what's it like Boyhood, like the movie Boyhood that took 30 years to make.
It's like Joe Hirsch's line, by the way. Joe, there was one point like late in his career where he was being honored by everyone. He won this award, that award, the key to Louisville, the key to Lexington. It was like one after another. We were up in the Churchill Downs press box, and I told him, I said, Joe, it's unbelievable. I said, you know, you're winning all these awards. And Joe said, yes, all I have to do now is die.
Yeah. I guess they're waiting for Bob to do something significant, you know?
That's it. Well, one more time, 9-3 at the Horse Park at the Alltech Arena. You can meet Lenny and Peter and Jennifer. Get all your books in one place. Get them all signed, and check out the Horse Park as well. You can go see Funnyside and Point Given, and it's special if you've never been. It's going to be a very nice day. It's going to be cool, 45 degrees and sunny though on Saturday at Lexington. So Lenny, thank you, Book.
Yes. Thanks a million, guys. Thank you.
Take care.
How about that? It ends up with a vivid and vibrant segment out of nowhere, Steve.
Hey, that's what live radio is all about. Speaking
exactly.
of which, I got a little side wager for you, and you don't have to say anything now. You can think about it, okay? But I am willing to bet you dinner at Osteria Danny, wives included, that Dallas wins the division over Philly. You can think about it. I know you're a big Eagles fan, and it has nothing to do with rooting. It's strictly handicapping.
I'll take that bet. Well, I don't have to think about it. I'll take that bet. Sure.
So
absolutely, I'll take that bet.
How the Cowboys are 5-4 is beyond comprehension. I'm talking about underachieving, but to me, they still have the best roster in football. Dak Prescott is on the verge of stardom. And no DeSean Jackson, and they have no wide receivers that can hold on to the ball. And the Cowboys own the Eagles. So, if you're willing to do it, the bet's open.
All right.
I eat cheap. You know that. And you can order the most expensive thing on the menu.
That's true. You're very reasonable. You'll take buttered noodles or
exactly. Or just squash. Some pasta dish over there. You don't have to worry about me ordering mignon or.
No, that's true. That's true. All right, it's a deal. I'm. It's Joan. It's Joan that's that heads for the lobster thermidor.
No, actually, it was Mandy when she was young. Mandy used to order the most expensive thing on the menu every time we went out. The waitresses knew Mandy, by the way. They'd say, I know, you want the most expensive thing on the menu. And this is when Mandy was like 10 years old. You know, she'd be ordering the lamb chops and the mint jelly and everything. And she had a reputation at her restaurant.
Very highbrow.
She's ordering.
That's great.
I remember in when we went to France, she was like 12, I think, when we went to France. But she kept ordering escargot every place we went.
I'm just shocked she was eating escargot at that age. That's funny.
Oh God, no! She was a food connoisseur when she was a baby. She was ordering all that stuff. And,
too funny.
The most expensive thing on the menu. So we always got a kick about kick over that.
Well, Steve, we got just enough time to talk about the Bob Hope on Saturday at Del Mar, and Baffert with 1,000 words. This is the other big horse from the Albaugh family, the million-dollar Pioneer of the Nile that won well upon debut, 88 buyer. He's also got High Velocity, but that is not that's just two of the players in here. What about Doug O'Neill with the Constitution, Strong Constitution, who only got beat by his own stablemate in the Sunny Slope, 4 left.
Yeah, well, if you're looking at the Equibase numbers, he's the only one other than 1,000 words to have a triple digit Equibase number. But I thought he ran a very game race. And what's strong about him and 1,000 words is that the thing I always love to see. I don't care what a margin is, and he got beat a neck in the race, but I like the fact that he was 5 1/4 lengths ahead of another horse who's in here, Zimba Warrior, who looks like he could be a real nice horse. And the same thing with 1,000 words. I mean, he only won by a half a length, but he was 6 1/4 lengths ahead of the third horse. That's what I really love to see. And then with Baffert, you always have to watch for the second horse. You know what I mean? High Velocity. Sometimes it's always the second Baffert horse that you have to worry about, and he's coming off a very, very impressive maiden race. So, I think this is a very, very strong stakes race. Yeah, especially with the three big, the two Bafferts and the one Doug O'Neill. And even that Zimba, like I said, even that Zimba Worry, even though he was beaten, 5 1/2 lengths in the Sunny Slope, he was coming off an impressive maiden win. It was at a tiny track, so you really can't go by it. And he hadn't run all that great at Del Mar. Although his first race, he was third to Storm the Court, so you can't knock that. But I thought his last race was good enough to at least consider him in here in the exotics. He couldn't prove it. Let's keep the Sormo. Those horses have a tendency to improve.
Speaking of horses.
Doug O'Neill's got two in here also, so.
Yeah, well, the other O'Neill, howbeit, seems just a cut beneath, but the horse that we should mention is the Andrew Lerner for Eric Johnson, Rager. This is an Into Mischief that's going to be making a dirt debut down inside, and You know, that's kind of a mystery horse that you can't strictly go by what he did going 5.5 on the grass.
No, we learned that in the Breeders' Cup Juvenile.
Exactly.
You know, so that was a good race. He came from off the pace, and I thought, and got to remember too, by the way, he didn't break well in that race. So you know, he overcame a bad break, and still got up to win. And you know, being into mischief out of a distorted human mare, I mean, he certainly should like the dirt. So it'll be interesting. I mean, his workouts are nothing to rave about. His workouts are both pretty slow, but
he ran 3 weeks ago.
He can't go by that.
Well, he just ran. He's got to be. He just ran 3 weeks ago.
Yeah. Well, I'm just saying. Since then,
two very easy. Yeah, he's obviously. He's obviously just galloping more or less into this because the race came October.
He worked slow before he won his first start too. I mean, he worked 105 and change before his first start, and he worked 105 again, you know, after his first start. So, some horses you just can't go by works anyway. And I don't know the training methods of Andrew Lerner. I mean, you just look at Maximum Security's works. I mean, Maximum Security, every time he works, it's like the slowest or the second slowest workout on the tab. You know, because that's the way Jason Service trained him.
I am amused, actually, looking at Rager, at the fact that Eric Johnson, the horse was actually 19 to 1, in fact, paid $41.
Right.
But the fact that an Eric Johnson-owned horse, the runner-up was Goalie.
that's funny.
How funny is that?
And the third horse was Rookie Mistake.
It all ties in, but the Goalie in particular.
Eric Johnson, I mean, he's all over the place now.
He is. In fact, I should mention that Joe Bianca and the TDN podcast has got Eric this week. And of course, Johnson, very much in the news after, with Lerner, the filly that was injured on Sunday at Del Mar, and Eric immediately said, do whatever it takes to save her, and they did, and it looks like she she'll be all right and survive the surgery, and you obviously got to worry about. About weight distribution and issues regarding laminitis, but they're very hopeful about Princess making it through. So that was one of the reasons that the TDN had Johnson on this week.
Mm. Also, there's a couple of really nice maiden races at Aqueduct and Churchill on Saturday. You know, which is unusual. You know, because it's close to their big. The big days when they have, like Churchill Downs, you got a whole card of two-year-old races. But they've got a good one here. Asmussen's got a couple of real nice ones. Paul Holtz has got a horse that's been Romario by Tapazar, who's been working his behind off. There's some really nice ones. There's a horse named Mr. Monomoy. I don't have to tell you who owns that horse. And he's been working well also. He had Bullet Works and a Palace Malice. So I mean, there's a real nice tiz now that Ian Wilkes has, and so you start. This is the time when you start looking. Like I said, both of Asmussen's horses are coming off of really strong workouts. West Point's got two horses in there, so it'll be interesting. Yeah, every time you see a maiden race now, you never know.
Well, the Churchill, we're 2 weeks, what's today? Just looking at the calendar, 14th, so we're two weekends. It's the 30th that they'll have the...
After Thanksgiving.
Okay.
Like I said, even Aqueduct's got someone, Mark Hennig's got a real nice Bodemeister, first-time starter out there. Oh, by the way, you want to hear a great named horse? There's a horse running in that Aqueduct maiden race whose sire is Competitive Edge out of a distorted human mare. The name of the horse is Trash Talker. I thought that was a really good, well-named horse.
That's cute. There was something written about. I know there's something I either heard about or why do I know? Why do I know about this horse?
Chase Tucker.
He's
run twice. He ran okay on the dirt first time. They put him on the grass. He ran horribly. So now he's back on the.
I knew I'd seen him again.
I knew we had seen him. First timer in there by More Than Ready for Barry Schwartz. So I mean, yeah. It's starting now. I tell you, pretty soon before you know it, it's going to be Derby Dozen, and it's going to be tough. There's a lot of really good horses out there, and a lot of horses you don't know what to do with. You know, let's see what they do with Tis the Law. See what they, you know, see if he runs in the Kentucky Jockey Club. But you know, what do you do with Dennis's Moment? What do you do with Eight Rings? You know, was that race an aberration? What do you do with Maxfield? You know, after being scratched, you don't know. You just don't know where to rank these horses because you know it's been turned out to be a crazy year.
Well, I am noticing. I pulled up that race that you mentioned, and with Trash Talker, and I had not looked at the Saturday card other than our race. That's another terrific card at Aqueduct. I mean, this has been some string to start the season. The racing has been out of this world, and this is a very nice card again. You got the Key Sense, which of course is the 2-year-old stake, but the allowance racing has been just great. Look at this field in that ninth race, that open company mile turf allowance, and turf should be fine going through the weekend.
Yeah, I mean it's good. I mean, listen, I was weaned at Aqueduct, so I mean, you know. It's a good track. It's a track. You want to see good races there, good fields. And we'll be seeing a lot of 2-year-olds coming up. And you know, other than the ones I mentioned, you know, there are horses that people have forgotten about. You know, people have forgotten about Greenlight Go, who I still think he's got a bad ride in his last start, but he's a very good horse. And then there's another horse who broke his maiden who got scratched out of the Breeders' Futurity, I think it was, that he got scratched out of that Three Technique, who looks like he could be any kind. And let's not forget that Structor now is supposed to go to the dirt.
That's right.
To win the Breeders' Cup. And then you got Honor AP that everyone's talking about. And you got the Breeders' Cup horses, Storm the Court and Nano Door, and, of course, Independence Hall. This is a heck of a group of 2-year-olds, and we don't even know what's going to happen in some of these other races. Let's see what happens in the Bob Hope, and let's see what happens in these other maiden races, and then the Kentucky Jockey Club and the Remsen. We had a horse that won. Yeah, I mean, the time was slow, but the track, you know, track is deep. But, yeah, we had a horse win impressively a couple of days ago, a 2-year-old, going a mile and eighth at Aqueduct.
That's true. We talked about that with Andy on Tuesday.
Yeah, so, they ran 154 or something like that. But, you know, they do that every year. Every year, the Remsen is always running 152, 153. Then, you know, the track gets really, really slow this time of the year. So I really don't go by that. But, you know, with these horses, you know, Aqueduct, you got this, you got the Remsen. I like to see horses, again, drop back, you know, and sharpen up before they, you know, embark on the Derby trail. Because these races have a tendency to dull horses, and I just don't want to see all these slow mile and eighth races leading up.
You know,
what happened with that Pletcher horse, Marconi. Remember? I mean, he won a mile and eighth in a slow time, and he just got dull and dull, and finally, you know, at the end of his 3-year-old year, he became a marathon horse. You know, who's a really good horse going long distances. Yeah, which suit him because he got so dulled as when he was a young horse by running a mile and eighth early on in his career. And if you're going to do that, I think you got to sharpen him up after that. So we'll be curious to see what they do with these horses.
Well, I'm glad we actually looked around and caught up with these other spots in addition to the Bob Hope, just the regular. Maiden races and so forth, and I already told people about you got the two-year-old stakes at Laurel as well, in with the Lewis and the Smart Halo, and they've got a nice card. There's a couple of nice supporting races built around those stakes at Laurel. So looks like a nice weekend. And by the way, I should mention I didn't get a chance to handicap going into tomorrow, but $91,000 carryover into the Stronach 5 tomorrow. Golden Gate, Gulfstream, and Laurel. So you should have a very nice pot and, a nice player advantage going into tomorrow's Stronach 5. Steve, this was tremendous fun. Thank you.
Yeah, I feel bad that we cut into poor Rich Eng again. I mean, I always feel guilty.
I know, that's all right. We'll get Rich. Rich is, like he says, he's the guy in the bullpen that's always ready to tap on the
Rich.
Right wrist and
reliable.
Say right hander.
Yes, exactly. Good old Rich. So I'll see you at Osteria Danny then.
Absolutely. Steve Haskin, everybody. We'll be back tomorrow for weekend preview. And boy, there's a lot. I just printed the Churchill action, races four through the end, and got all the Aqueduct to discuss tomorrow. We'll get Nick back in, and Scully and DeRosa, and we'll do Del Mar with Jeff Siegel. I talked to Hammer last night as well. Looking forward to Hammer's got some things on his mind. He's on his way to Oaklawn to do stall work. He's got to hand out stalls to everybody. There you go. Thanks to Steve and Lenny, the surprise visit. Because I knew Lenny was doing the thing at the book fair, so I thought we'd give him a shot, and it ended up being a lot of fun. Pete Fornatel earlier, and Dick Powell, and Tony Black as well. Thanks, everybody. Good luck if you're playing. I'll talk to you in the morning.